The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey friends, and welcome again to Afternoons with Mike. It's always a joy to be able to talk to my good friend Dave Zanotti, and Dave is back on the line with me here today, and it's we've been enjoying this beautiful weather. On Friday, we had a chance to get together for lunch, and boy, oh boy, that was a lot of fun, and welcome back to my program, Dave Zanotti.
Mike, thank you. It was a delight to be with you and Cindy and to learn more of your story and your history here in Central Florida as well as other parts of Florida. And it's just a privilege to get to know you and your family. Boy, God's put a lot of talent in that family of yours with you and your wife and your kids. I'm glad you're here in Florida.
Well, thank you. That's so kind of you. I'm very blessed. And anyone who knows my kids know that I am a blessed man because they're just wonderful people. And I'm altogether non-objective in that, but I, just a little bit prejudiced, I would think. But they are wonderful and talented kids and grateful for them. And I know you've got the same.
Well, we also shared some old stories of ministry opportunities that we've had over the years. There is less video out there of me doing it than of you, and we'll just let it go at that.
Oh,
but it's
man.
Fun to work with people who have been in ministry and in service and in communications for as many years as we have shared in this work, and to still be standing upright, still by the merciful grace of God, to be married to the same wives who are wonderful, wonderful people, much better than us, and to compare notes on what we've sensed God is doing in this country, the good and the bad, the stuff that we're excited about, the stuff that we're, oh, Lord, have mercy on us, we're in so much trouble. But it's great to have a perspective of history, because I think it's really essential to be able to see things in the perspective of long-term history, of biblical history, of world history, of national history, and then recent history, you know, the 20th century forward, to try to discern rightly the stuff that we're going through, because sometimes the stuff is really serious, and sometimes it's not so serious, but you have to be able to compare notes to know.
You know, Dave, you're saying that reminds me of a class that I had, a seminary class at Reformed Theological Seminary in Orlando, RTS, and it was taught by Richard Pratt. And Dr. Richard Pratt is such an amazing teacher. And he had a diagram that he would draw out in the intro to biblical theology, and it was a triangle, and on each point of the triangle, he had basically this triangle represented our modes of hearing from God, of really interpreting what God is saying and how God speaks to us. And on one point, one of those angles of the triangle was history, how what we can learn from God through history. And that's the history, obviously, of the church. That's the history that we have in the Bible. But then there was another aspect of that history, and that's each of our own personal histories and what we've seen. And those, all of those things are all on that landing point of one of those angles of the triangle. And, you know, you more than anybody that I've met in recent years, you are a student of history, of American history in particular, but also American history with the eye and the lens of a biblical worldview. And Dave, you're kind of a commodity, a rare commodity in this day and age. Not too many people look at that.
Well, I appreciate that, Mike. And I've had, like you, I've had great mentors, some of whom are still around, to whom I owe most of anything I've ever thought of. And then there's the ones I've never met, the people like G.K. Chesterton and C.S. Lewis and others who have meant so much to this world. And those are some of our best friends, are the people we've met on the bookshelves. So it's a privilege, and it's a great honor. Now, it's also the sort of thing where you kind of live a life where about half the people like what you're saying and the other half the people hate your guts for saying it. One of the funniest stories we've ever had was I had a need for an emergency back surgery a number of years ago, and it was a pretty painful experience. It took about 11 days to get resolved, and it was pretty tough. And so we were bouncing around at the Cleveland Clinic where the surgery was to be done, and having to go in a wheelchair from these different office desks to fill out forms and answer questions and so on and so forth. And it was a very difficult time. I got to one desk late in the day, and this person took my file, and I had to go through answering a series of questions to this person. And she looked at me, and she looked down at the form, and she looked at me, and she said, "You're that guy that's on the radio, aren't you?" I said, "Yes, ma'am, that would be me." And she said, "I hate that show."
Oh, no. Not exactly what you want to hear from somebody that's working on you right there.
And I said, "Well, thank you, ma'am, for being so honest. There are days I don't like myself that much either." And we just let it go at that.
And it's probably better off to do that. That's nuts, man. Oh, but I love your show. And Cindy and I were laughing. We sat down at the table at lunch, and you were talking. And I looked at Cindy, because we've talked about this. You have such a warm and trusting voice. And it's that way, whether you're on the radio, whether we're sitting around a table at lunch, whether we're on the phone, you always sound the same, and you always sound what I love what Cindy said. You have a very comforting and peaceful voice, and you speak to things that are very serious. Sometimes, like you said earlier, "Oh God, have mercy on us. God, have mercy on our country. We're in hot water and as a country," and yet you do that. You are able to talk about it in a manner that your voice puts out this peaceful, "Hey, we're going to be trusting in God, and God's in control." And that is so helpful. It's wonderful.
Well, I hope that's the Holy Spirit that's doing the speaking and the interpreting in that regard, because there are times, Mike, I see things on television and I hear speeches and I hear people make comments that I literally have to put a pillow over my voice and get out of the room to say what really has to be said somewhere, but just shouldn't be heard by anybody. I get as angry and as upset as everybody else. But it's not because we're not getting our way or our political party, so to speak. I'm a registered independent. Our political party isn't getting what they want. Or it's far more the sadness and the horror of seeing in real time people turn against the provision of the Creator, the living God, who stretched out his arms for us and died, that we would not have to live in bondage. And it's knowing that people are walking the plank and they're walking right off the edge, thinking that they're noble or they're even being helpful. And it's just the sort of situation where it's not that we're better than anybody else in any way, shape, or form. It's just that on occasion, we can see that this is going to be a disaster, and we don't want those people to be harmed, and we don't want others, innocent people, to be harmed who have no ability. I mean, for example, you talked on your program recently about a movie that's coming out on Roe versus Wade, and we have studied that decision for years, and I want to say it in this way. The people that I work with have never lost the debate on the Roe versus Wade decision. Ever, not with any pro-abortion person in this country. We have never lost a debate with an academic. We've never lost a debate with a lawyer or a judge or a justice. We've never lost a debate on the fallacy, the false premises, and the inconsistencies of what the Supreme Court did in Roe versus Wade. Because once you read it and once you study it, and you don't have to be a scholar to get there, you realize what was done wasn't right. It was raw political will. And it was the first time the court exhibited such a political, sociological form of law. That's what Francis Schaeffer called it. And absent of prior precedent, absent of so many things. And the facts are the facts, and the argument is there. But it's not because we didn't win an argument in the court. It's because of the consequence not just the horror of all the lost lives of innocent children, but of the diminishment of the value of the human soul that we've all experienced. We are all the worse off. Even those of us that are pro-life, we're all worse off because of abortion and the diminishment of the ethic of life in our culture. And that's the tragedy. That's what you scream out about in the middle of the night.
You know, there were so many people back in that day that were just, you know, and all of us that were alive then were dumbfounded at this decision. It goes against everything that makes any sense. And the sheer hypocrisy on the side of the left and on the side of the proponents for this is the fact that you will have these people who are save the whale people that will throw themselves in front of a parade or something where something is being done in the name of save the whales or save the birds or whatever it is. They'll put themselves in harm's way and acting like their heart, they're crying. And yet just tens of thousands and millions now of babies aborted. And there seems to be no absolute remorse or no concern at all for them. And that hypocrisy is astounding to me. And yet, even today, the party that is in control of this United States are trying to make that a right that would be absolutely raw, across the board, a right that could never be touched.
And what's tragic is when the court decides to create rights that do not exist in the Constitution. And of course, said most correctly, our rights are not in the Constitution. Our rights come from God. That's what the Declaration of Independence
tells us. That's right. Our forefathers recognized that, inalienable rights.
And the Constitution exists to secure those rights. So to go sniffing around in the emanations of the penumbra is the terminology that was used in both that privacy case and the Roe case. Griswold and Roe, I believe they both used the same sort of language, the emanation of the penumbra, that the right to abortion on demand for all 9 months for any reason emanates from the penumbra of the 14th Amendment it's ludicrous on its face, and it just makes no sense. But that kind of sociological law made up by an elitist, non-elected bench of justices has led us to the dilemma that we now have in the question of the definition of marriage and the definition of what it means to be human as it relates to gender, because what began in Roe has continued forward into these other decisions where the Supreme Court is making decisions about personhood based upon pure sociological law. In other words, it's what the justices feel. It's what they believe. And they look to shape their decisions and wrap them in precedent of prior grievances against the form of constitutional law which we now operate under. And this is why we're so concerned about what's happening with COVID-19. Because the processes by which you come to these decisions and implement policy that so egregiously violate people's rights today, those processes are going to be around tomorrow. And if we overreact and we panic in the midst of a virus that, if for all intents and purposes, according to Johns Hopkins University, and they've been right all along, 99% of the people who get it recover. It's tough. Like your case was a very tough case. But you're okay again, and most people are okay, and they get through this. The vast majority of people get through this. Yet we're making massive changes in law and precedent and structures that are violating people's rights. And what's going to happen when a virus that is really deadly comes along?
That's what's concerning, and I think a lot of people are really worried about what has been given up, those that are waking up. And I wonder at times, and Dave, I'd love your answer to this. I hear of people who are starting, I had a conversation this very morning with someone, and they're starting to see that the amount of liberty that we've lost is significant, and really starting to question even the governmental reports, the supposed experts who come on and tell us, and it seems like their story changes with the wind, and their opinions about when we're going to be past this is up one day and down the next. And I just wonder, do you see a kind of a groundswell of opinion that we're starting to really think that this is just a bunch of hogwash? Do you get that?
Not yet, Mike. Not yet. Now, how will we know that? It's going to take a while for those signs to come out. For example, in the president's speech, President Biden spoke about we would be told what we can and cannot do based upon vaccination, and that if we really abide by what the president is prescribing, though he really hasn't prescribed anything new, that we'll be able in small groups to gather in backyards and celebrate the Declaration of Independence on July 4th, on Independence Day. That kind of terminology was so arrogant, so over the top, so completely out of bounds for any elected official in the United States to say, we're going to tell you what you can and cannot do, provided you do what we tell you. Because then he went on to say, if there's any resurgence in this virus, if you don't do what we tell you, then we're going to take all this away again. This is wrong. This is not America. This is not the way we function as a country. And the question is, how will we know when people have actually changed, that they've had enough? Well, I think the 4th of July coming up is going to be very interesting, because what President Biden did in his speech was to pit the people of the United States against their own declaration. In other words, he said, we're going to tell you when you can be American again, when you can celebrate the Declaration of Independence and how you can celebrate that. Well, there's a little problem with that. The idea of the Declaration of Independence is that no elected official and no king will ever tell us how we may or may not celebrate our liberty. It doesn't work that way. It's we, the people, that make that decision. That's why we have a declaration. That's why we have a constitution. And the seizure of authority and the arrogant way in which and this is not in any way, shape, or form exclusive to President Biden. President Trump got close to this edge back at the Easter break time of 2020, where he was heading toward, let's have a wonderful Easter and stop all this and open everything back up. And then he got pulled off by Fauci and Birx and showed a set of charts and models that said, if you do that, you're going to cost millions of lives. Well, that model was a complete fabrication and totally untrue. But the president bought it. And suddenly he started talking about the scourge and all the trouble that it would bring in. And suddenly his language became militant. The people have been faked out by this virus and faked out by the lab coats in particular on this virus. And we've never, ever acted this way before from the top down in this country. The closest you can get to are Japanese internment camps in World War II. That's the closest you can get to our government being irrational in regards to striking liberty from people who posed no threat, simply out of fear. And this is just wrong. So how will we know when people have had enough? Well, I think that how they choose to celebrate July 4th will be one thing. How they choose to open schools or not. Interesting thing happened last week. Governor Bill Lee of Tennessee did something that was odd and profound in its oddity. The governor, who's been all over the board in regards to mask laws and COVID policy in Tennessee, he went to downtown Nashville and visited a number of bars and restaurants in the middle of the day, video recordings going on, and he didn't wear a mask the entire time. Now, the city of Nashville, like Orange County, has very tough mask regulations, and the governor simply showed up and didn't do them. I thought that was very interesting.
Now,
similarly,
go ahead. It's interesting that if we could find out the honest answer, was that an intentional thing or was that just not thinking about it when he's going in and not wearing a mask? You would think that was an intentional thing.
It was
It was absolutely intentional. It was absolutely intentional. Now, the question is, will the mayor of Nashville have the courage to attempt to issue a citation against the governor because he came into the city of Nashville and didn't obey the rules?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting question. Similar question arose on the front page of the Orlando Sentinel in the last couple of days about Orange County Mayor Jerry Demings' strike forces. Now, those are the terms that he uses, not us. He calls them strike forces. And the thousands of visits that these mayor-commissioned strike forces have made into businesses in Central Florida, writing them citations and issuing fines because they found someone who had a mask not properly fitted or below their chin or wasn't wearing a mask in a moment. And they invade and issue these kinds of citations. And Mayor Ron DeSantis said, you know what? I think I've had enough of that. And he issued an executive order. And I'm not exactly sure on all the legality of that order and whether what the legislature will do to stiffen that up or make it right. But the governor said, I'm banning those kinds of rules in Florida, and you got to give the money back. Enough is enough. We're not going to do this to people. We are not going to send the secret police from the mayor's office into businesses to harass them. If someone, and now I know this is a serious matter because we saw that same kind of a case happen in Ohio, where a county health department had the same kind of a strike force. They went into a specific, very small restaurant in a very small town on a very hot day last year, and they found somebody in the kitchen who was in a really hot spot washing dishes all by themselves who had their mask down below their chin. They wrote the company up, and then they chained the doors and shut them down. And we've been supporting that company, that small restaurant owner, in court in an Ohio case for months. I mean, it's this kind of stuff happens in America because people have lost their minds on the rule of law and are overreacting. And you ask yourself, I mean, really, these are real cases, Mike. I mean, I'm not making this stuff up.
Yeah, it's really hard. I mean, even to hear that, I'm reminded of the New York case where Mayor de Blasio basically said the same thing to I believe it was a synagogue, that they could not meet, and that if they did meet, that not only were they going to be arrested, but that it's like the whole synagogue would be taken over and the building sold and ended, like kaput, just like that. It's over. And you wonder, where in the world did this come from? How in the world is this happening? And where are those that can step up and say either in the law or in the courts, no, we're not going to do that. And that sounds like that's what Governor DeSantis has done now to this executive order in which it is an executive order that by Mayor Demings. There's no law that I know of behind that. Are you aware of any law?
No. It's just what they make up and they're going to enforce under the mandated authority that they have embraced under either a state emergency or a local emergency or quarantine laws. And all of this is clear abuse of power. And it is just flat out frightening. And of course, now you've got a president of the United States who's saying, we're going to tell you what you can and cannot do after you've been vaccinated. This is what he said. And that's almost a direct quote. We'll tell you what you can and cannot do after you've been vaccinated. Well, I got to tell you something, Mike. There's probably 25 to 30% of the people in this country who would say, I'm not going to be vaccinated. I am healthy enough that if I get this virus, my natural immunities that develop from it will be worth having for the rest of my lives, less of my life. At this stage in the game, I think it's in my best medical concern for my health and my family to not get vaccinated. They should have the right to make that decision without any fear of retribution from the government. But right now, all the government has done to us for 2 years or a year and a half now is to preach fear upon fear upon fear. It's all about fear.
And behind the fear,
just
control.
Not right. Well, that's where it comes from. Make people afraid, and then you can control them. Now, this is not exclusive to Democrats. This is not about who won the last presidential election. Please, we want to be very, very clear. This is not about socioeconomics. It's not about race. It's not about any of that stuff that you see stereotyped in the ping pong match of cable television night after night after night. Because I can tell you right now, one of the most grievous people in this process is a Republican governor who claims to be a Christian, who claims to be a conservative, and that's Mike DeWine of Ohio. I've known Mike DeWine and considered him a friend for decades. And on this particular issue, he's completely left the reservation of common sense, of science, and of good law. And this is a man who's a former U.S. senator and an attorney general and a lieutenant governor. I mean, this guy knows the way government is supposed to work. And on this particular issue, he has thrown everything to the wind because he's so terrified of a virus that 99% of the people, according to Johns Hopkins University, and now after a year and a month of absolute data being recorded in all 50 states, we know Johns Hopkins is right. The vast majority of people will recover from. And we're talking about 98 to 99% of the people will recover.
Yes, absolutely. And in a real way, and I understand that this virus is supposedly more, I guess maybe more easily spread and more contagious. But in a similar, I mean, when you take a similar way, the flu has been that way for a long time. There are other things for which we've been vaccinated for. And some people get that vaccine, other people don't. And, you know, there's never been this kind of a shaking about it. It's almost like you would have to wonder and start analyzing why or what was it that caused this virus to cause such a knee-jerk reaction in our country. What would be the answer for that?
Well, the first is bad science and lazy scholarship. What happened for the politicians who got hit with this hype from the media, which does not any longer have an objective branch? Our media is a narrative, a storytelling organization. It's a conglomerate, and it is controlled by. This is not a conspiracy, friends. This is not about some secret agency organization. The American media is controlled by large publicly traded conglomerates who have so much money that they have no accountability left in their practices in regards to their communications. They don't have to have accountability. They've got money. They don't care what the consumers say. They don't care what their critics say. Their media divisions, and that includes ABC Disney and NBC Universal and CBS Net, which is National Amusements, and CNN, which is owned by AT&T, and MSNBC, which is also owned by Universal Comcast, all of these news agencies tell you what their narrative is, and they are clearly in the narrative business. Even the Associated Press, which used to be viewed as a neutral agency that was solely existing as a nonprofit network so that all newspapers in America could have access to the news, no matter how rural or remote their setting was. So they were an electronic news agency, and you could count on the AP to basically tell you what happened. You could literally go into the newsroom and rip the AP wire off. You'd rip the paper off on the wire as it printed out, and you knew what happened. You didn't get commentary across the AP wire. You didn't get narrative. Now the AP, if you go on their site, you will find they are every bit as narrative-driven as everybody else. So you've got a situation where you don't have an honest communication going on in this country about this virus. That's the first thing. Well, then the governors found out that they could get their 15 minutes of fame every day if they simply would let the lab coats come up and scare us all to pieces. It became like a soap opera in the afternoons. And they did a great job at it. They scared us to pieces. And then they found out that if they scared you enough, you'd keep listening, you'd keep watching, ratings would go up, governors would become far more notable, everybody would know their name and what they said. And then they found out that people like being scared a little bit. And then they found out that they could scare people a lot, and they could control who would be an essential business, who wouldn't be, who would be open, who would be closed, how late you could be open. And the list goes on and on and on. The fear and the power, they left good reason, they left sound logic, and they left the law. And then they had to double down, because anybody who began to object became the enemy of the state. It has been a formula for disaster, Mike.
And, you know, most of that happened in a shockingly amount of few days or weeks.
You're exactly right. And it was, and the irony of it is Johns Hopkins University came out as the definitive agency that said COVID-19 is a mild disease with mild symptoms for most people. It is in the traditional family of a coronavirus. We have predictability in endless years of virology 101, first year med school. We know the general pattern of how these things will behave. We don't know how infectious it's going to be. We don't know exactly how each community is going to be affected. We're very concerned about the elderly. We're very concerned about people with pre-existing conditions. We got to watch that. But by and large, 98, 99% of the people, if they get this, will get over it. And a large number won't even know they had it. Now, if that had been the controlling definition, the science, the medical definition, which has not changed one whit by the experience, and we had governed our policies accordingly, that would make sense. But what happened was the MPHs got involved, the people with masters in public health, the public health officials who basically call themselves pandemic people. They're the people who've been training for these moments, and they treated this like it was a B-grade movie script. And they painted every model and every speech to the worst possible case scenario. We actually had people in charge, doctors with MPH degrees in states saying if there's one case of community spread, that means that 1,000 people have already been exposed to the virus. One case is 1,000 cases. They said that out loud. And they said cases will double every 6 days from now on until we reach the point where everyone has had the disease.
Mm-hmm. And that really is what supposedly brings this, what's referred to as herd immunity when everyone has it. But I tell you what, we've been seeing, Dave, signs in Florida, as you well know, where things are declining in terms of numbers of people being affected or coming down with this thing, reported cases of it, certainly deaths, people who are in the hospitals, those numbers have been going down steadily. But with all of that very good direction in that line, you won't hear the kind of story of optimism at all about an end to all of this coming from the news media at all.
No, and it's, look, when they said we didn't have PPE materials, we got them. When they said we didn't have ventilators, we got them. When they said we didn't have hospital beds, we began to invent and find hospitals. No hospitals were taken out of business or overwhelmed by this process. In fact, the fear and terror that was put out there by the governors and by, in some cases, the president's commission itself, and certainly Dr. Fauci. And now the new president's people see saying, listen to Dr. Fauci again. The fear that they put out actually caused people to stop going to the doctor, into the hospital, to the point where hospitals that make their money based on occupancy and services found nobody was coming, nobody was getting the health care that they needed, and the hospitals started to bleed out and literally begin to face bankruptcy because the lockdowns locked people out of the hospital who needed care. I mean, where was somebody thinking both sides of the equation on this thing? But you can't think that when you're either infatuated with power or intimidated with fear. This is a clear case of failed leadership across the board. This is what happens when you have no sense of history.
And mix into this a very unhealthy motivation to some people who are leading these different hospitals and things that are continuing to report things as COVID, which aren't really COVID. I've had people from the insides of hospitals and people from the insides of other establishments who have without a doubt testified to the fact that things are being called COVID related that had nothing to do with COVID, or deaths that were signed off as caused by COVID that had nothing to do with COVID.
So people ask me all the time, well, who do you think you are? Where is your degree? Where's your master's in public health? Where's your medical degree? You know what? I don't have either of those degrees. Got some degrees, don't have those. But you know what I do have? I have friends. Our organization has friends and strategic allies positioned all throughout academia and the medical community and the scientific community and people who are epidemiologists. And they have been telling us stuff for over a year that they can't say in public for fear of losing their job. They have been asking questions and they have been listening to our questions. And we have only repeated the stuff that we know to be true from people who are experts who have no motivation whatsoever to tell a lie. Well, why don't they come out public themselves? Because they'll lose their jobs, because they're afraid, because of the intimidation. Yeah, well, let me give you one example. Let me just, for the sake of our this wonderful listeners on the Shepherd Radio, whom we love dearly and we appreciate every one of them, just so they don't think that we're like getting to become radio people here, you know, like we're the answer. I'll ask you a question. I bet you know the answer, and if you don't, I'm okay with that, because I didn't know the answer until this morning, okay? So what in Florida, what percentage of people have died of COVID who are over the age of 75? And let me put it another way. When you look at all the COVID deaths in Florida, right, all the COVID deaths in Florida, how many people have died who are over the age of 75? What percentage?
I wouldn't know, but I would think it's high. Right.
63% of all the COVID deaths in Florida, right, are 75 years and older. 84% of the deaths from COVID are 65 and older. Now, let's put that together. If you are less than 65 years old, if you are younger than 65, you have less than a 16% chance of dying of COVID based on the experiential realities that we have right now. But guess what? It's far less than that. 98 to 99% of the people without pre-existing conditions, and age is one of them, who get this disease recover. And the numbers show it is true. Now, how about this one? This is something that the president's speech did not cover, which it's tragic that it didn't cover. The words never were there, because you asked the question about when are we ever going to hear when this is over? Well, let's look at a question that never came up in the president's speech, in President Biden's recent speech. He never talked about community immunity, sometimes called herd immunity. And when you go across the states and you do some very simple mathematics that epidemiologists do, that virologists do, that doctors do, that masters in public health physicians and that usually they're not physicians, academics do, let's do some Florida numbers. And this is just as of the last week. Florida's had about 2 million cases of COVID. Right. Well, we know that Florida has a population of 20 million people. So you do some quick math. Okay, 2 million cases. Now, we also know that if there is a factor for every person that has charted a case, there's at least one more. And you can't have a number smaller than one. So there's at least one more who had COVID, either didn't report it or didn't know it. Now, some people say that number is probably closer to 10 people who had it and didn't report it, or who had it and didn't know it. But let's be as conservative as we can be. We've got 2 million cases, which means there's at least 2 million more that have had it. Just a one-to-one ratio. That's 4 million. We've also now seen about 4 million people vaccinated in the state of Florida. Well, you take 4 million vaccinated and 4 million people that have had it, that's 8 million people. Now, of the 20 million people in Florida, about 16 million of them, about 16 million people, maybe 18 million people, are adults, because kids, by and large, don't get this. So you get somewhere between 16 and 18 million adults who are more vulnerable than the kids, probably closer to 16 million, which means you've already got 8 million people who have reached immunity on this. They've either had it and recovered, they passed away, or they've been vaccinated. You're already, and that's with the lowest possible projections. Well, if you take a look at the number of vaccinations that are happening in Florida, and there's a lot of them happening, by the time you vaccinate out another 20, 30 days, another 60 days to be sure, and get everybody vaccinated, there's going to be no place for this virus to go. That's called herd immunity. That is the only way, scientifically and medically, you beat a virus, is to create an environment where the virus has nowhere to go. You can't hide from a virus. You can only outlive it. And by the merciful grace of God and tremendous sacrifices on the part of wonderful people in America, we have 3 vaccines, probably closer to 4, almost to 5, where we can accelerate this at such a level that even though it is a mild disease, where it is being driven out of the community because people are either getting it and recovering, having the courage to do so, or being vaccinated. We are almost there. We are weeks away from being, and that's why, Mike, the numbers are dropping like a rock in every place you turn, you had their initial bump, then you had the next bump, and then you had the third bump. And now guess what? It's dropping like a rock, which is the way Johns Hopkins said this was going to happen from the start.
From the beginning. And just think about, Dave, the amount of businesses that have had to shut down, the amount of bankruptcies that have taken place that would not have had to take place if only our leaders would have listened to that advice rather than using this for what it has been, an opportunity to come in and to exercise a control that is greater than anything most of us have seen in the United States in our entire lives. It's just
Central Florida has been hurt, Mike, as much, if not more, than any other community in America. I grieve the loss of jobs.
No question.
It's heartbreaking, the Central Florida job losses. It's heartbreaking.
It's really hard to imagine the impact on all of those that were let go at the parks, all of the entertainers and those that were in service industries that just really, there was nothing for them to do. And they've had to find other careers, and we're hoping, we're praying that something will change on this, hoping that our listeners, our leaders, if they're listening right now, hey, it's time to be strong and courageous, and let's get this thing over. Let's get this thing where we can live again. Let's let America be that again, the land of the free. Oh, my goodness. I've got Dave Zanotti on the line. Going to have to take a quick break. I'll be back in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike right here on The Shepherd. Dave Zanotti on the line with me. And we were talking in the first segment. Boy, oh, boy, what a segment that was. But we were talking about the president's speech. Finally, we heard from President Biden and in a televised news conference, or at least a speech. I don't think it was really a conference. It was more of a speech as I understand it. And he told the concerning things about what we can and can't do, and we'll hear from the government as to what we can and can't do. If that doesn't cause you to have a little bit of an upset stomach, I don't know what would, Dave.
Well, the problem isn't, Mike, that anybody's wishing ill for Joe Biden. Look, in these last several presidents that we've had, have had reasons to be respected for their accomplishments. And I think that the scripture says, give credit where credit is due. I know that we tend to get into a sporting mindset where we stereotype the humans that take that job. And then we judge one another based upon how well we fit into the stereotypes. I don't think that's a redemptive point of view. I also think that it empowers a mindset we call presidential worship syndrome, which is far too powerful in our country right now. These are human beings elected to do a job for a brief period of time. We got to keep this in perspective. It's a difficult job. It's one of the toughest jobs in the world. In fact, it's too big for one person to do alone. And it's every one of them has value in the process. For example, Joe Biden's got to be given credit. Nobody has taken this office at the age he's taken, certainly in the modern era under the pressures. And that's it's admirable that he's decided after his third attempt to get to the office, he was willing to try again. I like the way Joe Biden tries to do politics better than a lot of people don't do politics at all. Right? I don't agree with anything in his agenda, but I'm not going to criticize the man's existence. So this is not personal. We both stand on level ground before a creator God. That being said, I think that Joe Biden's speech could have been written by Mike DeWine, the governor of Ohio, because it sounded just like the sort of fear-mongering that Mike DeWine pioneered in Ohio a year ago. It's the same kind of speech. The president's speech started off with subtle anger. Obvious anger, as if to say, I'm so angry that this virus came to the world, and I'm so angry that we didn't do anything about it soon enough. Well, Joe, what would you have done to stop a virus? Wish it away? Wave a magic wand? How do you stop a virus? Oh, in the early days, they tried everything. They tried lockdown, shutdown, double mask, triple mask. Bah, 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 bah. Do you know what? You can't outrun a virus. You can't hide from a virus. Viruses happen. It would have been really good, instead of being angry, to accept the reality that we live in a fallen world and bad things happen. The question is, what can we learn from those things? And where can we find God's help to get through them together? All right? No one was willing to accept that, because they don't want to accept we live in a fallen world, Mike. They want to accept a world that says, basically, if I change the channel, I can make it better.
Right. We don't want to accept the fact that we are all fallen. Everyone alive carries in the DNA of one that is not like God, one that is in need of a Savior. And I'm grateful that we have found that Savior. Those that know the Lord, we have that. But, you know, the truth of it is, we are all, and I like what you said, I like that expression, we're all standing on common level ground at the foot of the cross, and Joe Biden is standing on that same level. And yet what I'm perplexed about, when you talk about what he said last night, I did not see this speech, but when he was speaking and exhibiting this anger, I remember, and I think most of us would remember, promises made during the campaign by President Biden, by then candidate Biden, that on day one, sure and definite and helpful direction was going to be taken of his administration toward the end of this virus and the treatment of this virus. And we waited for days after that, and then it was just within, I think, the first 30 days of his presidency that he made a statement that nothing could be done to change the trajectory of the virus.
Da-da-da-da! Johns Hopkins University, March of 2020. We're back to the same basic scientific facts. Everything else was politics. Now, this is where we get back to the people of this nation saying enough is enough is enough. We don't need, I don't care what side, right, left, middle, we don't need more spin. What we need is what I call a giant swim at your own risk sign put up over the universe. We live in a fallen world that is dangerous. There are risks that are incumbent in this world every moment when you are here, every morning when you get out of bed. Swim at your own risk. And if you are foolish, then you've been warned. What we took out of this was the concept of, we said we're all in this together, but what we said was we're all in this together, and the politicians are the bosses, and you're the compliant children. So unity means do what I say or else I'm going to hurt you. No, that's not the way it works. Like, some people like wearing masks. There have been numbers of articles out recently about the fact people are going to continue to wear their masks for the rest of their lives. You know what? God bless them. If that's what you want to do, do it. But don't tell everybody else they have to do the same.
Michael Jackson did that for a long time. I mean, he was always seen wearing a mask, and that was his decision. And everyone was fine with that because that was a personal thing.
That's why you're Mike. That's why you are the man, because I completely forgot about that. That's why you're the host of this show. I completely forgot about that. And out of your musical repertoire, and people don't know how deep you are in music and how deep you are in the world of music on radio and broadcast, I completely forgot about that. I'm going to use that. I'll have to borrow that line. That's an excellent one.
Well, good. But, you know, the crazy thing is, when we saw that mask back then, it was really, to me, sad. It was a sign of a person who maybe might have been a little bit fearful. And I'm saying that nicely, Dave. I think he was greatly fearful and perhaps a little over the top being fearful and to the point of just being downright weird. But this thing has made it now to where people are in one of two camps, and there's really not a whole lot of others. There's a group of people out here who are just fully into it, and And as soon as they're done eating at a restaurant, that mask goes back on. And if that's the way, like you said, they're wanting to live, more power to them. But then there are plenty of people who are saying, I see through this. This is not going to be helpful. In fact, our same so-called experts up front told us there was no benefit. There was no curbing of things to the mask. There was no health benefit to it at all. And they changed their tune on that. And now they say it is.
And now what we're at now is the control game continues. The president started with the anger, which is unwarranted. He then moved to fear. He then tried to give us a little hope, but then warn us, if you don't do what we tell you to do, then, you know, we're going to have to take all this away from you again. And then said, and if we see the numbers going up because of variants, we have to take it all away again. Wait a minute. This is variants of a disease that still 98% of the people are going to recover from without any significant issues. So it's once again, we're back to junk science. And it's just got to reach a point where people say, thank you. We get it. Leave us alone and go back to worrying about things like the national debt, which you just jacked up by $1.9 trillion. With less than 10% of it actually going to COVID relief and 90% going to pet projects that Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer happen to think are a better way of buying friends and votes through wealth redistribution. We've got to come to the end of this madness. And I believe, Mike, there are enough people out there who really will come to their senses. Why? Not because they should agree with me or with you or with any political party or any politician, but because they're made in the image of God. And that means they have common sense and they have desires for goodness and for joy and for mercy and for celebration. Look, there's times for fasting and there's times for feasting, and people should be able to make their own choices. That's what liberty is about. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. Jesus came in the name of liberty to set captives free. The God of the Bible is a God of liberty, first on the spiritual side, on the inside, but everywhere the gospel goes, civil liberty is sure to follow, because the truth of the gospel sets people free so they can forgive and love and respect one another, because if they love God, then they end up having to love His creation. And the greatest of all that creation is what He made in the wonder of man and woman.
Mm-hmm. God help us. He who the Son sets free is not just free. He's free indeed. There's like a little bit of a cherry on top on that freedom right there. Free indeed. And I'm grateful to God for that freedom. And Dave, I thank you for what is basically, again, an analysis, a history lesson, and really common sense all on display in this last hour. The time is just floated by, as it always does. It just like a whiff and it's gone. But I look forward to the next time, my friend, when you're back on with me.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate you very much. And I sure appreciate the audience that takes part and supports the Shepherd Radio Network.
Well, Dave, you're the host of The Public Square, and it's heard several times a day on the radio station here. We look forward to hearing it every day, having your voice in our home and here in our studio. And be sure and say hello to the entire team around the round table.
Thank you, Mike. Blessings to you, friend.
And you. God bless you. And friends, thank you for being with me today on Afternoons with Mike.